Hello, hello, and welcome back to another episode of Walking the Field. I'm Alex Crow here today with a special guest talking Aggie football and recruiting. Today I'm joined by my dad and fellow big Aggie fan, actually an Aggie alumni to be exact, Ricky Crow. So dad, how are you doing today? How are you? I know you've been waiting to get on the podcast, and now that I'm home, I'm going to talk some Aggie football.
Oh, I feel like I finally made it, Alex. It's great here. It's oddly enough a snowy day here in Central Texas with the snow coming down outside, but I'm ready to talk some Aggie football with you today.
Well, first, Dad, let's go ahead and just talk about last season. One of the better seasons that we've seen in recent memory from the Aggs. They end up finishing out with an Orange Bowl win over North Carolina, and we can talk about how the Aggies might have been snubbed as we saw Notre Dame get blown out by an Alabama team that knocked off the Aggies. That was the Aggies' lone loss this year, and keep in mind that, you know, something that us Aggies always mention is, you know, the score might have been a little bit wider, the gap might have been a little bit wider against Alabama in the A&M game. However, you got to remember that there was also a time when Alabama was at full strength and most notably had Jaylen Waddle.
Yeah, no doubt. It was a great season for A&M. You know, got off to a little bit of a slow start. Not a great performance against Vanderbilt to start off the year. And I think that ultimately might have been something that hurt A&M, because that game might have set in people's minds that A&M was kind of an also-ran type of a team. And then, of course, as you mentioned, the Alabama game, that's just a tough squad, and especially whenever they had all of their horses, it was going to be a tough game. But then afterwards, A&M kind of righted the ship and really kind of built momentum through the rest of the year, as several teams did in the SEC. And so I think that for a year, you know, this year with Jimbo and the progress that he's made, I think they're really trending in the right direction.
And that was something that I think is very critical for the Aggies going forward, because, you know, they had a pretty, you know, of course they fired Coach Sumlin a couple years ago, and then their first year with Jimbo looked pretty good. And then last year took a little bit of a step back. The squad just wasn't able to get some key wins last year. And it was really nice to see that even in this little bit pandemic, a little bit of an odd season where A&M had a couple of games canceled, didn't get the full offseason, you saw a very veteran team led, of course, by the Maroon Goons on the offensive line really helped the Aggies, and shows that Jimbo is taking them in the right direction. And we also had, you know, some emergence of some really good skill players as well. You know, you look at Isaiah Spiller, and then in the bowl game, Devin Achane, who you've been high on really all season, and even in his limited action before the bowl game. And then you even saw some home run hitter action, you know, most notably from Chapman, the wide receiver. Unfortunately, we lost him with the torn ACL in the middle of the season. And all of these guys are coming back.
Yeah, there's no doubt that outside of the quarterback position, where you're losing Mond, who is kind of a little bit of a polarizing player, and I'm sure we'll talk about him a little bit, but, you know, the skill position you really have to feel good about if you're A&M, because they get essentially all of their receivers, all of their running backs back, and they also have some guys that a lot of people who don't follow Aggie football that hard like we do may not realize. A guy like Baylor Cup, who's a tight end that was a really high-profile recruit a couple of years ago. In fact, he was a more highly rated recruit than Weidemeyer. He's been hurt a couple of years, so you're going to get people like that. And then I think you're going to see some growth from some of these recruits that, again, some people may have forgotten about on the outside, like Damon Demas and Moose Muhammad and folks like that. So I think it's trending up for the Aggies.
Yeah, because a lot of those guys, and something that we can go ahead, I guess, and talk about now, because you look at all those guys, you know, in this season, in this 2021 cycle, for good reason, A&M was a little bit thinner as far as offensive talent, you know, skill position recruits, because they just have so many. Because you look at the depth chart, and at running back, you've got Isaiah Spiller, Devin Achane, as well as Anaya Smith, who a lot of people kind of forget because he lined out, you know, in the slot so much that he's a running back as well. And then you look at the wide receiving corps, you got guys like Chase Lane, Caleb Chapman, Jalen Preston. You've got guys, I mean, again, Anaya Smith lines up a lot on the outside as well. Even guys like Hezekiah Jones, we feel like is probably going to come back this season. You know, he was another guy who was injured most of the season, came on late, and ended up with 18 catches on the season. And so that's one of the reasons you see, like, not as many skill players, but A&M, where they've really done a nice little job, and it's really good that they had, is because we've already seen two or three offensive linemen enter into the draft from what was one of the top offensive line units as a whole in the country.
Yeah, I think that's going to be probably the big key here, and you could tell that A&M was really focused on that. They picked up some linemen last year, but then this year they really had a good haul, and we'll talk about that. But that, there was no doubt that that was the difference in the team this year. Of course, the defense played better. Mike Elko's doing a great job with that team, and as you continue to get more and more athletes and higher caliber recruits in there, I think they're just going to see a continued growth of the defense. But that line really made the difference, because what you did is you made really, really good running backs look great. You made what some would say is a, you know, average to a little bit slightly above average quarterback look, you know, pretty serviceable. And they really just controlled, even against teams like Alabama. I don't believe they gave up a sack against Alabama. And so that was really a testament to the work that they've been able to do. And I think it's really a, I think it's really something that's going to help them down the road, because as you look at the guys that A&M had on that line outside of Kenyon Green, who was a five-star recruit, everybody else on that line was really a three-star. And I think that that's a real testament to Coach Josh Henson, the line coach in Jimbo's system, how they're able to grow players, because that's important. You know, as you're trying to attract really good players, that's a sales point, just like your facilities and, you know, the whole swag of your program is the ability to get people and take them from, you know, being at one level and raise them to another. That's going to be important as people look to try to go pro.
Yeah, and that's something that, you know, Jerry and I talked about just kind of in our recruiting in general episode, about how teams like Texas needs to show how they can develop guys from, you know, good to great college players into that top tier, you know, NFL prospect. And it's something that you can already see in some areas in A&M's program. I mean, most notably at the defensive end position, you see a guy like Myles Garrett come out of A&M, go number one to the Cleveland Browns, and then continue to perform in the NFL at his position. All of a sudden, you know, you've got four strong side defensive ends and two weak side defensive ends, including five-star Shamar Turner and really high four-star Tunmichi Adeleye, the top two recruits this cycle for the Aggies. And I think that when you see how well they were able to develop, again, not super flashy recruits were these offensive tackles. I mean, Green, of course, was a five-star, but that was kind of a product of seeing how well that those guys were able to grow. You continue to see that, and so now you're getting a higher level of talent off the jump, and then you can develop that into, you know, what could potentially start to be looking, you know, looking at higher, you know, first, second round talent in the NFL.
Yeah, and that's the thing, Alex. I think if you look over the last few years, it's really a case of, there's an old saying in football that the old coaches have, that it's not always the X's and the O's, it's the Jimmys and the Joes. And you start looking around at people and you look at the draft over the last few years and you look at the kind of talent that's been put into the NFL by the Clemsons of the world, Georgia, Alabama, you can just go on and on. And A&M really hasn't put a lot in there. You had Garrett, who was a special player. You had Eric McCoy. You had a few other, you know, second round types, and it's been a little dry. And even this year, I think the latest mock drafts that I've seen really have Kellen Mond probably the top A&M prospect going round four, round three, kind of in that area. So, you know, as you're looking there, A&M, you know, has been able, I think, to do pretty well considering they're a little bit bereft of talent that is able to play at the next level. But as you start getting some of these guys that you've talked about and some of these ones that we're going to talk about, I think that's going to be a key for A&M trying to shift into a bigger role there in the SEC West and on the national platform.
Yeah, and just to go ahead and talk about Kellen Mond, because I agree. I mean, from a talent standpoint, he's looking, again, I've seen him in the, you know, as a day three guy, essentially, 4 to 7, depending on what teams need a quarterback, when they want to jump on him, etc. And the biggest reason that we saw that rise in stock was because of that great offensive line play. Because you and I have talked about it, you know, for many years, because, we watched Kellen Mond play the last 4 years pretty much exclusively. And when he had time in the pocket, when he wasn't getting pressured and stuff like that, all right, he looked like a Heisman candidate. But when he got blitzed and when he was getting a hit, getting knocked to the ground and stuff like that, I mean, he was a completely different quarterback. And the fact that, you know, A&M was able to go have multiple stretches of going games upon games without giving up even a quarterback pressure is the reason that A&M was able to have so much success. And that's something that doesn't really jump out on the stat sheet. You know, it's guys, you know, guys like these guys, you know, like Ryan McCollum and Dan Moore, who've already declared for the draft. You know, you're not gonna hear about that as much, with the exception of a little color commentator drop in the game as a statistic. But man, that was really the reason we saw such a jump from Kellen Mond this year from years past, because we've seen him. Sometimes it takes him a while to make the decisions, takes him a while to get going up to his top speed, and having that lineman protection is something that I think really benefited him in his draft stock.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you talk about taking a little bit of time to get going, and again, you have to take your hat off to Kellen Mond, because the guy has been a warrior for A&M. So all comments aside, we talked about the fact that he never really got hurt his whole career at A&M. He was able to play and to be able to answer the bell, because I'll tell you, this year he had great protection. In years past, that hadn't been the case. I mean, he has gotten really hammered and has been able to answer the bell every time. So, but what I would say, and I think you're right, is that he seems to not have a suddenness, is what I would say. I think the guy's obviously, he's an intelligent guy, he's an athletic guy, but the suddenness that I think is what he lacks in decision making, in getting to top speed. And it's really funny, because I'll tell you something that I would love to see, and maybe you or one of your University of Missouri journalism guys that really understand how to work video and could do side by side, I would love to see a clip side by side from the Orange Bowl. There was a play toward the end of the game where Mond was getting pressure from the backside, and he realized it, and he tried to cut to the far sideline to get around it. I would love to see a side by side of that and Jimbo whenever he realized that they were about to dump the Gatorade on him, and I'd like to compare the burst, because I'm not sure that old Jimbo, the former D2 quarterback, doesn't have a little bit more burst than Mond.
Yeah, he definitely, I would definitely say, because anyone who's seen that clip knows, I mean, Jimbo had a pretty quick first step.
He was good.
You know, I mean, granted, the guys behind him were carrying a large jug of Gatorade, but man, he was quick off the line of scrimmage.
That is
no doubt about it. But now, just to kind of start talking about next year and some of the recruits, you know, speaking of quick off the line of scrimmage, again, like we mentioned, A&M really killed it this year at defensive end. Again, four strong side, two weak side, and that was the area that I think Texas A&M, I mean, that's really the area that I know they did the best at. Of course, again, we mentioned Shamar Turner and Adelaide as well, but you also look at guys like Marcus Burris, who played at a very, very good Pleasant Grove and Texarkana in high school. You just see guys like that, and then even some guys that, you know, they went up to Pennsylvania, got a couple of guys, most notably Elijah Judy, a weak side defensive end, and then up to Brooklyn for Jayzeon Harris out of Brooklyn, New York, another defensive end on that weak side. And again, I think that we're going to see it, I think, most quickly with the offensive line after the good offensive line play this year. But again, that's just A&M reaping the benefits of having Miles Garrett and not squandering the talent like we've seen other coaches do with high-profile guys. I mean, the guy that Jerry and I always talk about is Khalil Tate, who everyone thought was going to be the next Johnny Manziel, was playing for Kevin Sumlin at Arizona, and just never panned out. It's like he never took that next step. And we saw, you know, a great recruit, one of the best, if not the best recruit A&M has ever gotten in Miles Garrett. We see him perform all throughout college and make an immediate, instant impact in the NFL. And now his Cleveland Browns are in the playoffs just a couple of years later.
Yeah, you know, if you look at the D-line, it's funny because whenever I was in college at A&M back in the late 80s, early 90s, that was back in the Wrecking Crew days, and A&M had great defenses. And whenever you really thought A&M, you really thought of linebackers, because they ran a 4-3, and so they had a lot of great linebackers. But now, as times have changed, you know, you get into a little bit more of this four lineman, two linebacker, five, you know, that kind of alignment. And really, I think that as you look at players, you've got to look at diversity and their ability to do multiple things. You and I were watching Cleveland play over the last couple of weeks, and we noticed several games where Miles Garrett was dropping into coverage. And, you know, not that we were happy about that necessarily, but I think it just talks about, you know, how people have to be able to play multiple positions. Even, you know, in the old days, you had pass rushers that would be your defensive ends. And at one point, they always lined up on the same end, and then they started flipping ends. But now you even see people trying to do matchups where they will move ends to, you know, defensive ends to the inside to, if they see a weakness. Probably Reggie White, the great, was one of the greats who could move inside and out, one of the first ones to do that. But you start looking at these guys, and somebody like a Shamar Turner, you know, he's a guy who I think can play are all these strong defensive ends. Those are guys that you might see, depending on how their body develops. You may see them stay outside. You may see them slide inside and play a little tackle or hybrid between both of them. And then you look at some of these weak side defensive ends, like Judy, maybe like a Jazion Harris. Those guys are probably a little bit more like defensive end, maybe linebacker kind of guys and stuff. And so, you know, those kind of guys really give you the ability to do a lot if you're Coach Mike Elko and try to do different things with your system to try to frustrate some of these high-powered offenses that everyone's having to deal with today.
And that's another big thing, and something that I was going to mention next is because they've got all of this talent from the defensive end position, really on both sides, and they're losing a little bit of talent on the defensive tackle and also at linebacker. I mean, probably the biggest loss that A&M's going to see on the defensive side of the ball is the departure of Buddy Johnson, who was just a great, I mean, another guy, you know, not a super high-profile recruit, but a guy who just worked and worked and worked. And when all the dust settled, you know, at the end of his college career, he was the leader of that Texas A&M defense, and I know it's someone that you really liked.
Oh, man, I'm telling you, Buddy Johnson, he was one of those guys that, as you mentioned, you know, and you know, this is the thing about recruiting is you never really know how people are going to progress. You know, most people would say that arguably the best player that A&M's had in the last 20 years as far as the impact on the program is probably Johnny Manziel, right? And the guy was a three-star recruit just like Buddy Johnson was. But Buddy just was a great leader. He was a tackling machine for A&M. Again, not necessarily a toolsy kind of a guy. He was a three-star recruit. But, man, what a big heart he had and was really a big part of taking advantage of that great line that A&M had and just flowing, kind of like a Ray Lewis almost, that the linemen would eat up those blocks and Buddy would just go clean house. And he's going to be a big loss. I was hoping he would come back. A couple of the A&M guys on defense are coming back, which is good, but Buddy, fortunately for him, unfortunately for A&M, is going to go try his hand at the NFL, and certainly we wish him the best of luck.
Yeah, because really, no one deserves it really more than him, because he's just made such a big impact, played multiple, you know, stayed his whole career at A&M, was even flirting with maybe even staying that extra year that everyone was granted with the pandemic season. Everyone essentially gets the red shirt and can come back, and you see a couple of guys taking advantage with it for Texas A&M right now. Looks like the one who's already declared that he's coming back, he declared out of the draft, I guess you could say, was a defensive tackle in Jaden Peavy. That's a big pickup for A&M, considering that it looks like that Bobby Brown has also put his name into the draft as well. Again, another anchor on the defensive tackle side. And so I'm with you. I think that it's going to be very important, and we can go ahead and talk about this next, but much like I think that A&M next year needs to focus on being able to spread the wealth a little bit on offense, I think it's going to be very important to keep these defensive ends playing, even if it means sliding inside to tackle or outside to linebacker or doing something like that, because you've got so much talent and you don't want to see them transferring next year just because they're not getting to play. And you look at that most, I think where you can see the most impact of that is where you look at Alabama's receiving over the last couple of years versus A&M's this year. Because there was a lot of guys you mentioned, Moose Muhammad as well as Hollywood Demas, two guys that are super talents, right? I mean, Demas, I think he might have even been a five-star receiver who neither one of them got a catch this year in the season, whereas you have guys at Alabama, you know, at one point you've got a Ridley, Devontae Smith, Jalen Wall, you've got all those guys at the same time, and yet Coach Saban and whoever's been their offensive coordinator, whether it's been Sarkisian or elsewhere, they've been able to get those guys just some touches just to keep them around, right? Because and that's why you've seen they've had such a great run of wide receivers. And I think that you can look at, you know, just looking at the stats, you've got Anaya Smith with 43 catches and Jalen Weidermeyer with 46. And then you've got Chase Lane, Hez Jones, and Caleb Chapman all had more than 10, and then nobody else really got the ball. You know, you had a couple of catches here and there from guys like Jalen Preston and Cam Brown, but even those two guys, those are our next two highest receivers, and they had, you know, 12 catches between them. And I think that it's going to be important next season for Jimbo to really get those guys involved to make sure that you don't see guys like Demas leave.
Yeah, you know, that's a challenge, and I guess some people would say good problem to have, that you've got such a talented group that you're really worried about that kind of a thing. But it is a worry, and some people have done a good job of kind of mastering that, I guess, as much as you can in Alabama, as you mentioned. But A&M is going to have to do that. They've gotten some really high-profile recruits, and you know, the ability to integrate those guys into the system. I think it does a couple of things for you. One, as you said, it keeps them there and keeps them from transferring. You know, everything's a lot more mobile these days. People jump into that portal and they're gone. And so you have that. But I think also the other thing that it does, and this is what people don't realize a lot of time, is, you know, a lot of times whenever you look at teams, like even if you take teams that are on the rise, let's say, like I can remember whenever Baylor under one of y'all, yours and Jerry's favorites, Art Briles, whenever they were kind of on the rise, you know, there was a point where they really started coming up and they were a factor. But the challenge that they always had was they might have had 11 good players on both sides, but they didn't have any depth. So if anybody got hurt, you know, as games, as the season wore on, you know, you just got worn down a little bit. So that depth is important. So I think as you look at the running back spot, as you look at the receiver spot, as you look at places like the D-line where you rotate people especially, those are areas that A&M really could, I think, stand to widen that rotation a little bit and get some more of those guys in, because I think it feeds a number of things that will benefit them.
Yeah, because you look at on defense, there's a bunch of guys that didn't get a whole lot of snaps this year. And so you kind of go back and forth with whether, you know, do you think it's good? Because a lot of times in the NFL and stuff like that, you know, they really like to have a veteran quarterback when they draft a quarterback so they don't have to throw him in right away. But there is some experience that you get as well with getting thrown in right away. You know, it's kind of the trade-off that you have, whether you develop and learn the offense and do all that from a clipboard standpoint. Versus, you know, a guy like Joe Burrow who just gets thrown into the, I mean, he gets thrown right into the fire behind one of the worst offensive lines in Cincinnati. And there's different ways you could look at it. It's obviously, I think, a lot easier to rotate the guys on defense because that's typically a very rotational position anyway. You've got, you know, you rotate your defensive tackles, you know, even multiple times per series. Same thing with the defensive ends and stuff like that. It's a little bit more difficult with the wide receivers, I think, just because a lot of times you want your you know, your four best guys out on the floor all the time, make your offense as dynamic as possible, and it's sometimes hard, especially when you've been at a little bit of a talent deficit at wide receiver as far as 1-4. You know, we've of course had, you know, the Mike Evanses of the world, but we've also had a lot of guys who weren't as highly recruited. I mean, Chase Lane, 3-star, he was one of our best wide receivers this season, especially after Chapman went down. And so you want to say, like, well, he's been doing really good. Do we ride the hot hand? Do we give, you know, some of these younger guys? And that's something that I think that A&M, it's going to be important for them to fill that out moving forward, because I think that you're going to want to get them in and more than just, oh, Chase Lane has gotten injured, so now I'm going to put one of these guys in.
Yeah, I think it's going to be, it'll be interesting to see how they progress, because there's, if you start looking at, I can't really speak as much for the defensive side of the ball with Elko, but one of the things that, you know, if you study Aggie football or you study Jimbo Fisher, you see this, is that his offense is fairly complex in terms of reads for the wide receivers. The other thing, and this is just something that, you know, if you watch that Orange Bowl, you just saw this in, you know, in big, bold, you know, high definition on your television, is you absolutely have to be able to block. And that's something that whenever you're a high-profile receiver playing at the high school level, you may not have had to do that because, you know, you were kind of the big man on campus. It was kind of more of the old Keyshawn Johnson, throw me the ball kind of thing. And you weren't asked to do that. And you're going to be asked to do that because that run game is important. And I think it's something that these guys are going to have to make that step. You know, it's just like anybody does whenever you go from high school to college, whether it's a student or in this case as an athlete, there's an adjustment period, and what you were able to do to be successful at one level, it may not translate to the next level. You know, there's always a time where talent kind of will carry you so far, and then you've got to be able to be in the process and work. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens with those receivers. I'm really excited about it, and, you know, it'll be interesting to see if some of these 4- and 5-star guys can push out some of the Chase Lanes and some of these other guys a little bit. You know, the one thing I would jump in, though, and say about a little bit of an unfortunate thing about this year with some of these young guys on the offensive and defensive side of the ball, even quarterbacks for that matter, is not having those preseason games hurt a lot because, you know, whenever you get into the SEC, I mentioned we had Vanderbilt the first game, which wasn't great, but they played us like they were. we just really didn't have a lot of games where we really blew people out, where you could really get some of those guys in there. And I think that that was kind of an oddity of the year that hurt a little bit. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and that's one of those things, not only not having kind of the, you know, the summer workouts and doing all that stuff, for spring football even, for the most part, didn't really happen. You didn't have all that off-season program type of stuff. And then you also didn't have, you know, play in the UTSA or the, you know, whoever you want, you know, an FCS normal will play like Lamar or something like that, A&M will. And you don't have those games. And I think that's something that also made a factor. And because the offense that Jimbo runs at the receiver position is so complex, like you mentioned, it's probably better you have guys like Hez Jones, even guys like Jalen Preston, stuff like that, and Chase Lane really running that kind of show, just because that way you know, okay, this guy was here last year, he got a little playing time, and was able to make an impact in that way. And so you trust that a little bit more versus an unseen, you know, you haven't seen in crunch time in the heat of battle that you'd have with a guy like Moose Muhammad or Demond Demus as well. Moving on, though, I guess really the biggest thing to me with wide receiver, no matter who's playing, is the biggest, I guess, flaw you could say that I saw from A&M on offense last year, and it's something that you and I have talked about a fair amount, was that A&M's wide receivers, and this really took a blow when Chapman went down, they had a hard time burning just one-on-one coverage. They didn't do very well in the press coverage, and that was where you saw Kellen Mond, even in some of the games where he was having some nice protection, he really struggled to throw the ball just because he was having a hard time getting receivers wide open. I mean, his best target was not a burner in any means in Jalen Weidermeyer. I mean, he was the leading receiver, and he was a guy who could kind of box people out, much like in basketball, and, you know, hit that big target. But they had a really hard time going down the field, and which is why you didn't see A&M blow a lot of teams out. They really had to grind it down the field.
Yeah, and probably where you saw that most was in the LSU game. LSU, you know, they've got pros on that team. I know they had a tough start to the year as they had a lot of turnover, a lot of people going to the league and all of that. But, you know, you take somebody like Derek Stingley Jr., who's just a phenomenal cornerback. Again, he didn't play a little bit later in the year, but he played against A&M, and that guy's going to play on Sundays. And our receivers just could not get open there. And I think that, and then the other thing is that, you know, let's face it, A&M, especially once Chapman got hurt and was out of there, they really weren't able to push the ball down the field. That's the one thing I would say in watching these playoff games in the NCAA, you know, the Final Four, is that, you know, the teams like the Ohio States, the Clemsons, and the Alabamas, for sure, they can push that ball down the field. And I would say A&M really had to operate in a, you know, 5, 10, 15-yard kind of window, and that was where they lived, and they just kind of live there. And so I think it'll be interesting to see if they can do something either with an upgrade in talent, or maybe it's a change in quarterback. I don't know. Maybe it's a little system change that allows them to kind of push that ball down the field a little bit. Because if they can stretch it, then all of a sudden I think, you know, with that running game and then the ability to go deep, you know, that's really the formula that Alabama has now, right, with Harris and all of those receivers that they have.
Yeah, and we can go ahead and talk about quarterback, because obviously it's going to be the first time in a really long time, especially in recent memory, the last couple of years, that we're going in with a kind of a clean slate at quarterback. Got some unknowns at that position where, as the last couple of years, you know, it's been pretty clearly it was going to be Kellen Mond, and we were going to have him. Jimbo really liked Kellen Mond, did him really well for his 4 years. But this year, it's going to be a little bit interesting, because I think this year it's really A&M's going to have to decide in which direction they want to take their offense, because, you know, they've got, of course, Eli Stowers in this class, a guy from Denton Geyer. They just got knocked out of the playoffs, I believe, yesterday, as the day that we're recording this is on a Sunday, the 10th of January. And so you've got him as kind of a dual threat. And then you've got Haynes King, who we saw in some action last season just a little bit. I believe he even came in the Alabama game at the tail end. And we saw some flashes of him. Of course, he was a standout star playing under his dad at Longview. very, you know, storied Texas high school football program. But then you've still got, you know, he didn't play, and Jimbo said the reason that, you know, he didn't get the nod over Haynes King in the games this year is just because he wanted to see Haynes King play, see exactly what he was working with. But you've got a pro-style quarterback in Zach Calzada, and so it's going to be interesting to see which way that Jimbo wants to take the offense next season, because I would look at Mond, and I'm not sure exactly what Mond was rated at initially, whether he was a dual threat or a pro style, but he developed very much into a pro style guy. He was a guy who wasn't super mobile, as we mentioned, had some problems getting up to top speed, making decisions in a hurry. And so it'll be interesting to see whether we have, you know, whether A&M decides to go with Calzada and try and keep that pro style quarterback, or if they're going to start trying to, you know, get their offense moving up to where it's more of a dual threat action, because the last two guys they've recruited have been, you know, pretty high profile dual threat quarterbacks.
Yeah, that's going to be, I think, the challenge or the question, as you said, because, you know, Mond was a dual threat as he came out. What a lot of people don't remember is, you know, Mond was from San Antonio. He went to IMG Academy. And Mond actually was originally committed to Baylor and was a super high-profile recruit. This is right whenever the whole thing with Briles kind of unwound, and a lot of guys ended up bailing out on Baylor and went to Texas or different places, and that's kind of how A&M got Mond. But, you know, there was a quarterback, I guess, competition back whenever he was a freshman between he and Nick Starkle, and Starkle actually won that competition. But then he got hurt in the opening game against UCLA, which was one of the worst games in A&M history, where they blew, I mean, just an enormous lead to Josh Rosen and UCLA. But then after that point, really Mond, you know, kind of handled it from then on. And, you know, so it'll be interesting to see. I think at the time it was probably the right call because Mond did have some mobility where Starkle didn't. But this year behind that line, it would have been interesting to see what Starkle could have done, you know, just if you played it forward a little bit with the protection he had. So I think you're spot on. You know, King does have maybe a little bit more of a pedigree. He was I think he ended up being a four-star recruit, but he was kind of swinging between that four- and five-star recruit. He's a little bit skinnier guy, but he's very fearless, a coach's kid, as you mentioned. So those are some intangibles. But I'll tell you, whenever I've seen Calzada throw the ball, it really reminds me a lot. You and I've talked about this. It reminds me a lot of Kyle Allen, in just the fact that whenever all of that kind of transition was going on with Allen and Murray and others that were kind of in the mix at quarterback for A&M, whenever you saw Kyle Allen come in, the ball just came out of his hand differently. I mean, it was just on a rope, man. And that's what it looks like with Calzada. But I'm just not sure. You know, the one thing that I would say is in, you know, you saw it this year, a little bit of option that A&M would run with Mond, Mond's ability to make some plays with his feet, although he didn't do it as much as I think he should have. He was able to do that. That's something that I almost think that you're, I mean, think about it. Even your top two quarterbacks, let's say this year, arguably, that are going to go in the draft, Lawrence and Fields, both of them have some wheels. And so, you know, to me, everything seems to point toward King, but that's just my, you know, my reading the tea leaves right now.
Yeah, because you look at it, and I like the point you made about King. You know, he is a coach's son, so he's been around football a really long time. You know, it's possible that would lend itself to Jimbo's complex offense. That was one of the things he really liked about Kellen Mond. And one of the reasons why, despite, you know, occasional suspect performance, Mond was able to keep that job because he really understood the offense, according to Jimbo Fisher. I mean, he understood it just better than just about everyone. And so whoever can kind of pick up that offense and make throws, because we saw Calzada, of course, he was a sophomore this season, or I guess technically might have been a redshirt freshman, but he'd been there a year prior to Haynes King, I guess we could call it. And he was a three-star coming out of Georgia. And like you said, I mean, he's throwing the fastball pretty much all the time. I mean, he's throwing the Aroldis Chapman. It makes everyone else look like they're throwing like a Greg Maddux. I mean, it's a very distinct, like you said, it just looks differently on the TV and in person when you see him throw that ball. And it'll just depend, because one of the things that Kyle, you know, talking about Kyle Allen, one of the things that he had a problem with at A&M, and one of the reasons why he ended up leaving, and I believe he ended up going to UTEP, was the fact that it was always 100 miles an hour when sometimes it didn't need to be. You know, he's checking it down to his running back at 100 miles an hour when that one just needs to be more of a flip. And so I have to see how he's able to adjust the velocity on the ball, see what kind of touch he's able to develop. It's going to be a really interesting competition. That's when, you know, we hadn't even talked about Eli Stowers, a guy who's played for a really good program in Denton, Denton Geyer. made it very deep in the playoffs pretty much every year he played. Dual threat guy, was able to run the ball. I think that his stats don't really do him the justice, because from what I saw from Denton Guyer, and I didn't watch him every single week, but it looked like they had just some semi-suspect play calling at some points this season. You know, in the opening game against their big rival Denton Ryan, we saw, you know, again, they have Eli Stowers, consensus four-star quarterback, one of the best players on their team from a talent standpoint, and you see him throw like 12 passes in that game. And granted, Denton Ryan had some had a really good defense, really good secondary, but even still, I mean, I feel like you've got to put it in the hands of your best player, which you could argue was Stowers. So I think that he could have been helped by some coaching decisions. You know, they could have ran the air raid. He could have been throwing it 30, 40 times a game. That could have made him look better potentially. But again, another very good athlete. And we can go ahead and talk about this now. It's an area that needed to be hit by Texas A&M that they've finally been able to reach, and that area, of course, being Denton. I mean, you look at all the talent that's come out of Denton. Denton Ryan and Denton Guyer have been two premier programs in Texas and the UIL. And A&M just hadn't been getting guys out of it. And you mentioned also, you know, we've talked about it as well with Shadrack Banks coming out of North Shore and the implications of that for future recruiting at Texas A&M.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Jimbo's come in and has done a really good job with A&M's recruiting, which had really fallen off. If you look back, you know, Sumlin had a really good run as a recruiter, and we jokingly say he turned a lot of five stars into three stars, unfortunately, in some cases. But, you know, if you go back to 2016, A&M had the 18th ranked class, depending on who you look at, give or take, 17th in 2017. And then 2018, which was Jimbo's first year, he was 17, which doesn't sound like it's great, but he really closed quickly in that class. And then got to number four and number six this year. So I think trending in the right direction. But you're right. You know, as you look at the state of Texas, historically, A&M has done very well in the Houston area in general. In East Texas, they've done really well. But oddly enough, Houston North Shore, which has really produced some great prospects, they haven't been able to get in there. In fact, the last prospect they have gotten from North Shore was in 2000, a defensive back named Eric Crutchfield. So that's a 20-year shutout that was pitched. And then, you know, as you mentioned, you look at Denton, you've got Denton Ryan, Denton Guyer. I mean, that is a hotbed of football. People like Oklahoma and Texas have just made a living going there. Even some of the schools like Ohio State, and, you know, who really has gotten their brand out across all of the country. But A&M, until next year, whenever Stowers and Deuce Harmon walk on the campus, A&M has no one from the city of Denton in Texas. So there's a few of those schools around there. I mean, you know, that you're going to have some of that all the time that's naturally going on. But I think as Jimbo continues to try to catch some of these guys that are in the Southeast Conference that are consistently ahead of A&M recruiting-wise, namely Alabama, Georgia, and LSU, you're going to have to crack into some of those your powerhouse programs and start getting some of those big-time players there and kind of fence your border a little bit.
Right, yeah, the whole building the fence is the biggest thing, because that was something that Jerry and I, again, talked about with Texas, about how they're getting dominant. I mean, Texas legacies are getting sniped by teams like Ohio State and Alabama just because guys are not sure they want to play for Texas, you know. You and I were talking about the Brockermeyer brothers. I mean, you're looking at two guys that probably grew up going to Texas games. I mean, you're thinking that you've got to win that. And A&M, to their credit, has done a pretty good job from what I've seen with guys who are like Texas A&M legacy guys, right? Guys who grow up wanting to play at Texas A&M. I feel like they've done a nice job of that. But they need to start hitting some of these other guys, because, I mean, you look at North Shore, they've got just tons of talent. I mean, they've got, of course, their quarterback, Demetrius Davis, is going to Auburn. And this year, we were able to get Shadrack Banks, but that team's good every single year. I mean, they were looking this year. They were actually knocked out yesterday, last night, both they and Duncanville, who'd played in the last couple of 6A state championships here in Texas. They were looking to three-peat. And you know, if you've got three-peat talent in Texas, that's got to be where you're looking first.
Yeah, you know, that's without a doubt. And I think you're right. I mean, there's going to be some guys that you're probably not going to get, like I doubt the A&M was ever going to get the Brockermeyer, you know, twins, because of just, it's like one of those deals where it's like, okay, it was probably hard enough for them not to go to Texas, but they sure wouldn't go to A&M. You know, going somewhere else would be a little bit better. But you know, you've got to be able to get the ones that are kind of in play. And, God, just as a side note, you think the whole Brockermeyer thing was the nail in the coffin for Tom Herman? I mean, I think it just has to be. Whenever you can't sell Texas to a legacy like that, whenever, as you said, those boys probably came to every game, you know, their whole life, and they went, I don't want any of this. Man, that just – that I have to believe if you're a Burnt Orange, you know, alumni, that had to be the beginning of the end there for Tom Herman.
Well, yeah, because on top of that, you talk about another legacy and a guy who was committed to Texas, Quinn Ewers, consensus number one – not number one quarterback, number one prospect, all right, perfect rating per 24/7 recruiting. And Quinn Ewers, super quarterback, ends up flipping – from Texas to Ohio State. And I think that you're exactly right. Between the Brockmeyer brothers as well as Quinn Ewers, you just can't have that at Texas. You can't be losing guys like that. Because like you said, those are legacy guys. Those are guys who grow up wanting to be a Texas Longhorn. But then they evaluate the program and they say, well, you know, something Jerry and I were talking about, they hadn't had a guy, you know, get drafted in the first round since maybe 2015 or something like that. And you're not getting that visibility with Texas being real, you know, that upper echelon team. They played in one Big 12 championship, lost to Oklahoma. They didn't play well against Oklahoma. I think they went 1-4, 1-5 in those games. And guys, just look at Ohio State, and they're cranking out first round talent, you know, left, right, and center. And they say, you know what, I think we're going to go there. We're going to go to an Alabama team that's churned out, you know, tackles in the first round the last couple of years.
Yeah. No, I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, as you start going and trying to continue to build that recruiting base. Because, you know, the one thing I would say about Jimbo is, you know, he was not in Texas, right? His roots, although he did spend time in LSU, who always does a good job recruiting the state. And he's, you know, I'm sure he's no stranger to a lot of these places. But, you know, I think as time goes on, he'll build more and more of a relationship, and his recruiters will build more and more of a relationship with some of these Texas coaches and, you know, some of these 7-on-7 coaches, frankly, because that becomes a big part of it. And, you know, they'll continue to ratchet that up as he continues to build that brand. You know, the one thing I would say that is a little bit of a worry is, you know, A&M plays pretty boring football. I mean, you're talking about defense, run the ball, play action, right? It's not high flying like a lot of these other offenses are. So it'll be interesting to see if they're challenged getting quarterbacks and receivers, particularly, you know, from the state going forward. If that becomes a little bit of a challenge.
Yeah, and it's something that you can look at it, you know, one or two ways. You can say, well, you know, Mac Jones is playing this wide open spread, simple concept, he needs padding the stats. Or you can look at guys, you know, there have been some guys who've been high, it's different points on guys like Ian Book or even like the Kyle Trask who are playing in just a little bit less of a tamp down. I mean, of course, Florida had to really throw the ball this year just because they had really no running game. But you look at guys like that and you say, okay, well, that's more of a pro style, a realistic pro style offense. For right now, I mean, that game, of course, with guys like Kingsbury and stuff entering the league, you see the game starting to progress into more of a fast-paced air raid type of style. But right now, I mean, that's just kind of, at the end of the day, that's kind of what it is. And I think that should be a selling point as well. But you look at places that A&M has done pretty nicely. We mentioned a couple of guys on the defensive side, a little bit more from up north. That's no doubt some of Mike Elko's doing. I believe that he coached up, at Notre Dame, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
That's where he came over before being at A&M. And then you saw some presence from Jimbo recruiting his old stomping ground in Florida with a couple of guys from Miami, an all-purpose back, as well as you know, Amari Daniels, who's an all-purpose back, as well as Yule Keith Brown, who I think right now 24/7 is projecting to be more of a slot receiver. He played on both sides of the ball at Miami Central High School, had some snaps at cornerback as well as slot receiver, and was really good at both of them. And so you see that nice base, but I think you and I had both talked about you'd like to see them hit Denton more, hit North Shore and those power programs, and then even hit the Austin schools and stuff like that. You know, need to get into mix for guys like Klubnik.
Yeah, as I look here, you know, I was trying to make a list of places that if I were, you know, like Jimbo wants my advice, right? But if I were advising, you know, that team, to me, if you start looking at Texas, you've got Denton, Duncanville, North Shore, Westlake, and Aledo. Those are really high school programs that are great. They've churned out a lot of players over the last few years, and just A&M just has not gotten, they're really hardly a seat at the table with that. And then, you know, you hit on it. A&M has done a great job in starting to kind of build that national brand in terms of being able to get some players predominantly from the, I'll say, the Mississippi East. So they've been able to hit Florida with the connections that Jimbo had in that area. They've been able to go up east. They've really made some good strides whenever you start looking at that Pennsylvania, New York area and that. And we've seen that with people like Fidel Diggs and then some of these guys that we talked about here today, you know, Elijah Judy and Jayzeon Harris, people like that. But one of the areas that I think would probably be geographically the next place that I think they really have to start making some hay is out west. You know, if you look at kind of, you know, you think about Arizona, California, and Washington is really, would really be the three out there that are the big focus. A&M's done pretty well in Colorado. You know, they got Trey Zoon this year, an offensive lineman, number two player in Colorado. But you start looking at those places there, I think A&M has one player on their roster from California. They've got none from Washington, and I believe we only have one from Arizona. And so, you know, that's really fertile ground because if you look in the last few years, some of the names that, you know, you'll see that are you'll recognize from recruiting, you know, Kayvon Thibodeau, who's playing for Oregon, you know, was the number two recruit. Brew McCoy, number nine, he was from Modern Day High School, that, you know, which again, that's one of those programs like we're talking about in Texas. Spencer Rattler from Arizona. And then you look even last year, you've got people like Bryce Young, who, again, Modern Day High School, going to be the next quarterback at Alabama. He's really good. Ringo is from Scottsdale, a cornerback, went to Georgia. And then, you know, the quarterback from Clemson that came in this year, DJ Ugalele has you know, he was from California as well. So there's lots of talent out there, and those are guys. Whenever I say the DJ was the number 10 recruit nationally, so all those guys that I just mentioned were top 10 or 11 recruits nationally over the last couple of years, and you got to get some of that. And so I think that'll be maybe the next place that they try to really focus on, especially given the fact that the West, really outside of Oregon. You know, USC's kind of picked it up a little bit again, but everything else is kind of in flux out there, right? Arizona's not great. Utah's been probably the most consistent, kind of low-key. Colorado's coming up a little bit. You know, Chip Kelly, who knows what's going to happen there. Washington's kind of down. Now's the time to really go and try to harvest some of that out there. There's a lot of people that have done a good job of doing that, too.
Yeah, and one team that did a nice job of it last year was Texas. You know, big pickup of Bijan Robinson. He was from Arizona, their running back, and you saw how explosive he was late in the season. He just looked like he couldn't get stopped. And you're exactly right. I think there's no better time to recruit the West from not being out West than right now. Because I'm with you. I look at Oregon and I look at USC. It's kind of the two premier teams, because despite Utah being a very good program, they just don't recruit at that super high level. You know, they're much like they recruit much like a group of five team, where they take, you know, some three stars and some two stars and get them into three and four stars, and they just operate like that. And that's fine and dandy, but that's good for teams like A&M that can really make moves into those areas. Because, like you said, UCLA looked better this year, but still are not playing at a super, super high level. And then really none of the teams in California outside of USC are recruiting at a really high level.
Well, you know, just if you look at that, you know, you've got such a good base to recruit from in Texas. I mean, everybody comes to Texas to recruit because you've got a lot of people, a lot of great high school football. You know, it's one of the hotbeds of the country. So you have that. As we mentioned, Jimbo's got a good base there pretty much all through the South, but certainly Florida, which if you're going to pick two places to really, you know, be good at, those are two great ones. But, you know, you start looking. You don't have to get all your players from there. But if you look at people like Alabama, they go out and pluck Young. You know, that's a big get. You see Clemson plucking a quarterback. The one that to me is just, as you really start to follow recruiting big, the team that really to me just has a great brand nationally is Ohio State. Because, you know, we've talked about some of the ones like Quinn Ewers, you mentioned, from the state of Texas, committed to Ohio State. And then you look at some of the ones from 2021. They've got Ibaka, the receiver out from Washington. And they're also in on another guy from Washington as well that's a strong side defensive end that, you know, you start rolling that up with all these guys from Texas and other places. That they're probably doing as good or better job of anybody in terms of operating from a national brand, and it shows. I mean, the big three are the big three because of that.
Yeah, and that's the reason why you see they just have a stranglehold on the Big Ten right now, because they are out-recruiting. Not only are they out-recruiting everyone in the country, but they're grossly out-recruiting everyone in the Big Ten. And that's why you're seeing teams just fall behind. They just can't compete athletically. Because when you're plucking, you know, top five guys in Texas, you know, because again, in Texas in the 22 cycle, not to talk too much about the 22 cycle for Ohio State, but they've already got the number one quarterback in Texas, and they've got the number one wide receiver. So that's a strong start in general. You're hitting on guys from California, you're hitting on guys from the Southeast, and you've plucked, you know, two of, you know, minimum the top 10 in Washington already. Just bang, bang, bang. Ohio's not a bad place to be recruiting. Michigan has some talent at Ohio State because of their brand and because of their recent dominance in that rivalry game over Michigan. You know, they're plucking those guys too. I mean, it's getting to where, you know, just about if Ohio State has wanted somebody, there's just no one that's been able to compete with them.
Yeah, they've done a really good job. Like you said, Ohio's got great high school football. You start getting in some of those programs there. They churn out a lot of players. And, you know, they've always done a good job recruiting regionally there, between there and Pennsylvania, kind of Wisconsin, that whole area. You know, those guys are all, you know, kind of like a lot of places. You try to protect your borders and then go pilfer a guy or two. But they really have done a great job of just moving out into other areas of the country and doing a great job of recruiting some of the hotbeds to supplement their talent. You know, even people like Ezekiel Elliott, I think he was an Iowa guy, you know, that was a big-time recruit.
Oh, Zeke Elliott was actually from Missouri.
Oh, Missouri. Okay, Missouri. Yeah, I knew he was from one of the ones in the Midwest there. And, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, they're able to go get those guys. What a difference he would have made to Mizzou in this case.
Yeah, because I only know he's from Mizzou because I've heard people lament over the years that they – I mean, I don't even think that they offered Zeke Elliott because they didn't think he'd come, right? And he was a guy that – I mean, it seemed like he might have wanted to go to Mizzou, and they just never offered them. And that was just something that was a problem with Mizzou in the past, and that's why you see Drinkwitz has already been having some success, because he's been offering guys who want to play at Mizzou – an opportunity to play at Mizzou. You know, there's no reason not to get. I mean, you talk about Ohio State, one of the guys who is actually transferring out of there just because of the large depth of talent at wide receiver, guy Mookie Cooper, didn't even get an offer from Mizzou out of high school as a four-star from St. Louis. I mean, you just can't do that, and especially at a job like Missouri. Like, it's one thing to not offer somebody in the state of Texas if you're Texas because there's so much talent, right? But in Missouri, there's not, right? I mean,
right.
It's a much smaller pool of talent. And if you're the premier program in your state, if there's a good player, you got to at least throw out an offer. Because who knows? I mean, maybe it's someone, you know, like you. Like, you know, if you were in my shoes and looking to play somewhere where your parents had been, you know, both Aggies and stuff like that, and you want to play at A&M, and then A&M doesn't offer you. Well, I mean, all A&M had to do to get you was just throw the offer out there, and you would have went.
Right.
I mean, you would have gone. So I think that's something, and again, that's something that I think that A&M has done much better, and I think it's something that they're going to really try and hit on in the next couple of years. I think that there's some A&M legacy guys who are coming up and who are doing really well, because that's the other thing. You know, A&M is starting to build, again, because you could argue that they were a little bit behind Texas as far as really famous legacies and guys who were super athletes going to the NFL and stuff like that. I mean, Texas has a ton of those guys. And A&M's starting to, you know, have those guys mature and you know, their children are starting to get up into the high school ranks. And I want to see, and I think that could be the next big step, is you see these children of athletes and high-profile alumni go back to A&M and play football because, you know, they're so good. I mean, because you look, I mean, that losing Ewers, I think that was an, I mean, losing the Brockmeyer brothers definitely didn't help Herman's case, but the fact that you had a commit from the consensus number one player in the nation in 2022 at the quarterback position, the most important position on the field, and then you get him flipped to an out-of-state team, no less. You know, it's one thing if he flipped to a Baylor, it would have hurt, but it would have been another thing if they flipped to A&M or, you know, TCU or something like that. But to lose him to just an out-of-state school that, you know, didn't have a whole lot of presence in his recruiting, considering he was an alumni and he was a guy that, again, probably grew up watching a lot of Texas football, I think that was what really sunk Herman, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I think, you know, from an A&M Texas standpoint, the pendulum has kind of swung a little bit. you know, whenever I was in school there, you had Jackie Sherrill, and then R.C. Slocum kind of took over for Sherrill, and everybody was down at that time. That's what people don't realize. You know, you had Oklahoma was down, LSU was down, Texas was down, so A&M really had a good lion's share of recruits. You didn't have quite as much national recruiting, although that was kind of the start of people starting to leak off, like to Florida, to the U, and to Florida State and all of that. But then over time, A&M kind of fell back a little bit. Mac came into Texas, really swung the pendulum that way. Then at the tail end of Mac's time and during the Charlie Strong time, it kind of swung back to A&M because, whether you like it or not, Sumlin, as he came in, I mean, he really had it going. You know, they would call it the swag copter, right? I mean, they would go recruit with that helicopter, and they had a lot of high-profile recruits. But then his time kind of came toward the end, and Herman came in. You know, it seemed like it kind of swung back a little bit toward Texas, and I think now, you know, Jimbo's got it swinging back a little bit toward A&M, but Sarkisian's going to be an interesting play there. You know, he's obviously got a great pedigree with an NFL background and the success at Alabama. And, you know, there's one guy, we haven't really talked about him, but, you know, we talk about a little bit about on the offensive side of the ball for A&M. You mentioned the running backs A&M has, and certainly they've got a good collection of them. They do have Amari Daniels coming in for Miami Central, as you mentioned. But one guy that they're still in the mix on that they really would like to get is Johnson, the running back L.J. Johnson. And they're in a battle with Texas for L.J. Johnson. He's from Cypher High School, and he's really a good-looking back. And one of the things that I'll say Sarkisian did was he's kept the running back coach for Texas on his staff. So that presumably will help. So I think most Aggies feel like that L.J. Johnson may end up staying with his lean toward Texas. But he would be another good one to get.
Yeah, and I think that was a very good strategic move by Sarkisian because, well, I mean, even without L.J. Johnson, you saw what he was able to do at the running back position, what Texas was able to do with guys like Bijan Robinson. And even last year, you know, all their running backs got hurt. I mean, they'd taken that Jordan Whittington, who was a wide receiver, and they'd made him into a running back. He got hurt. And they were rolling with Roschon Johnson in the backfield, who was a quarterback, right? And then now this year, they used Johnson a little bit. They used Ingram, who they'd used in the past. But it was really the Bijan Robinson show down the stretch. And that could be something. It's going to be interesting because both of those teams have a pretty established young core of running backs that L.J. Johnson's choosing between. But man, Cy Fair, that's an example of Cy Fair, not that L.J. Johnson needed some help looking good, but Cy Fair made him look good. They gave him the ball 20, 25 times a game. You know, it was kind of like the opposite we saw with like Stowers and Denton, where they could have had him throw 30 times a game, but they only had him throwing about 15 passes a game, something like that, so the stats weren't as flashy. Whereas Cy Fair said, all right, who's the best player on our team? Let's get this guy the ball. You know, let's get some guys out in front of him and let him go to work. And it's going to be a big pickup for either team. And you talked about him. You know, that's really the last recruit, I guess you could say, that A&M is really in the mix with as far as scholarship players. They've picked up a couple of preferred walk-ons as well. Like they've gotten an All-American long snapper, actually, out of Stratford. So, you know, just that's the last big recruit, I guess you could say. But one other thing that I know that you wanted to talk about as well, something that came out just a couple of days ago from the time that we're recording this, is the fact that one of Tennessee's vaunted linemen, Wanya Morris, tackle from Tennessee, has entered the transfer portal. And with A&M's lack of experience, I guess you could say, on the line with a bunch of guys departing this season, that could be a huge pickup. And that's something where, from everything that I've seen, you know, on Texags and online from different recruiting presences, I think that A&M should really make a run at Wanya Morris.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, if you were to draw up somebody who would fit the bill for them, it would be Wanya Morris. He's a big 6'5", 320-pound tackle. He was a five-star recruit. He was one of the big recruits that Pruitt was able to pull there early on at Tennessee. SEC all-freshman team, and, you know, really they were able to outmaneuver, you know, I mean, all the usual suspects, right? LSU, Florida State, Bama, all the big guys for the five-star. You know, right now he is a Georgia kid, right? I mean, he came from Georgia. But the names that you really have heard right now, I would say out first and foremost, is Oklahoma. That's been kind of the one that's been kicked around. But, you know, given what A&M has lost, and there's a little bit of uncertainty. You know, there's a high-profile recruit that A&M got out of Arkansas last year named Chris Morris, who was one of the top three guards in the nation. Now, a guard, not a tackle, but Chris Morris. You know, he ran into a little bit of an issue with an evading arrest citation and didn't get to go to the Orange Bowl, so I'm not sure what's going to happen with him. They've got a lot of people coming in, but boy, you sure would love to get somebody with that kind of experience like Wanya Morris has and plug him in alongside of Kenyon Green and then sprinkle in, you know, three new guys to go along with that. So I'm sure that Coach Josh Henson and Coach Dickey and Coach Fisher are well aware of it and trying to do what they can to reel them in. And they do have, you know, they do have a few scholarships left. We mentioned L.J. Johnson. You know, at this point, I think I'd rather have Morris than L.J. Johnson, just given the roster. And so it'll be interesting to see kind of how that plays out with Morris. He's probably one of the, I would say, probably one of the most impactful transfer portal guys that is out there right now as far as somebody who's like a big-time legit player.
Yeah, and don't be surprised if you start seeing more guys maybe hit that transfer portal because, of course, Tennessee being saddled with potential recruiting violations. Same thing with Georgia. They're starting to say that Georgia wasn't, you know, I believe Dan Patrick actually broke that Georgia was recruiting a little bit suspiciously. And so it wouldn't surprise me. I think that was really when that kind of news started to break. That's around the time that Wanya Morris, I guess, decided that he might need to be going elsewhere. That and the fact that Tennessee really faded down the stretch of the season, opened up really hot. I believe they won two or their three first games and then lost just about every other game. I mean, just it wasn't even close. They just got overwhelmed. And part of that was the fact that they had minimal offensive identity. I mean, they had all those five stars. You know, you look at their line from right to left, you had all five stars and then a fifth-year senior who I think was a three- or four-star when he was originally recruited. So you had the talent on the offensive line. You had some decent talent outside and good running backs, but no quarterback play, and that's about what sank Tennessee. Because you look at teams like Alabama and stuff like that, and if you're a team that really makes a living off running the ball and you use that to mask a deficiency in the passing game, you're going to get exposed when you play a team like Alabama. It's the same thing you see in the Big Ten a lot of times with teams like Wisconsin. You know, they'll roll over everyone in the Big Ten, but then they'll play just that different caliber of speed and athleticism at Ohio State. And now you all of a sudden you've got to rely on guys like Alex Hornibrook, who've thrown, you know, 100 passes all year. You can't just hand it off to Jonathan Taylor every time because he's getting stopped, and you run into a big issue, and that's basically what you saw happen with Tennessee this year. So it wouldn't surprise me if even more guys, and even guys who are getting recruited in the next couple of years, maybe back away from that because they don't want to be associated with that brand.
Yeah, that just, I know watching A&M play Tennessee this year, of course that's whenever the news broke of those potential allegations, but you just look like you just had a bad culture there. I mean, it just everything about that body language, the whole way that they played. Because say what you want about, you know, like I'll because we saw it at A&M, right? In the last days of Kevin Sumlin, you know, it was very similar. You had kind of a losing culture that started to percolate into the program, and you could clearly see that at Tennessee. So I would be surprised if they don't make a change in coaching here, maybe even still this year. It wouldn't surprise me. But it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. Some folks think that there'll be some people that'll get a pass this year because of the pandemic. But, you know, there's no doubt if you could pick up somebody like Morris from that bunch, that would be a great pickup for A&M for sure.
Yeah, and so with that just about wraps up this special different edition episode of Walking the Field, where myself and Ricky Crow, my dad, talked about Aggie football and recruiting. Dad, I know we're already both looking forward to next year after having such a nice season this year with A&M. And really, I think that A&M, if they're able to really replace that line that they've lost a lot of and have solid quarterback play going forward, I think that A&M could really be a contender next season. When A&M's line's been good and they've been able to run the ball, you've seen them really compete on a national level.
Yeah, you know, I'm just quickly here, we'll say as we wrap up, you know, as you look at this A&M recruiting, on the offensive side, we talked a lot about Stowers. We talked about Euclid Brown and Amari Daniels, you know, the running backs. or Brown maybe an athlete and stuff. Both of those from Miami Central, who, by the way, Miami Central, talk about a who's who of running backs coming out of that program. Devonta Freeman, Dalvin Cook, Willis McGahee, you know, that's a quality place. A name to remember, you touched on a little bit, Shadrack Banks, and the fact that he's from North Shore, and, you know, we hadn't gotten anybody there in 20 years. Interesting to see what he ends up projecting as, because he's a 6 foot, 220-pound receiver, and he runs the ball a lot. So there are people that speculate that he could swing into the backfield, just depending on what's going on. A couple of guys that I think are interesting, you know, we talked about tight ends, and A&M's going to be getting cut back. They've got Weidemeyer, they've got Blake Smith coming back. They did pick up a couple of tight ends, Fernando Garza from Katy, another one of these programs that's just great. And then a super good athlete named Demetrius Crownover. Now, he hasn't signed yet. His brother plays for A&M. He's a running back. And there's speculation that he's going to maybe, you know, take like a blue shirt or something like that and sign a little later. There's speculation that he may not sign because the running back room is getting a little crowded. So that's to be determined. So I think that's going to be interesting there. Kind of one guy that A&M's been able to get that we talked about a little bit, you and I did. They've picked up a preferred walk-on. You mentioned the deep snapper. They've also got a quarterback from Port Neches Grove named Blake Bost. And he really, if you go look at his film, if you're a football fan, go look at his highlights, because he's got a little bit of, for A&M fans, a little Johnny Manziel in him. He's a real dual-threat guy. You know, these offensive linemen, you've really got some good tackle and some good, you know, some good prospects there. Probably Bryce Foster. Again, if you are a highlight watcher, please go watch Bryce Foster, because, you know, there's people that like to watch people dunk in basketball. There's people that like to see skills guys do amazing things. The Odell Beckham one. I mean, if you want a treat, go watch Bryce Foster's highlight tape, because this is a guy with a nasty streak in him, and that's really going to be fun to watch. And then, you know, the other thing I would just say, Alex, just wrapping up, I think one of the things that's kind of cool on the secondary, we didn't talk about that outside of Deuce Harmon, really, but there's a couple things I would point out. A&M did get two recruits, one of them Kendall Davis, the number one recruit out of the state of Oklahoma. That's big for A&M, you know, to go north and bring somebody back. You don't really see that. Guy's also a basketball player, so you know he's an athlete. And then they also got Drayden Norwood, a cornerback who was the number one player out of Arkansas. Now he'll be transitioning from quarterback to cornerback, and he's going to be one that I think is going to be somebody that's going to be special. And you know, the other thing I would mention that we didn't cover, I just want to make sure we grab it all. Coming back, also we mentioned Jaden Peavy, but on that defensive side of the ball, right now it looks like Leon O'Neal's coming back, and then also Elijah Blades, who had opted out this year, came back in and really didn't get to play a whole lot, but he was a starting cornerback for A&M, and so he'll be back presumably next year as well. So, you know, things looking up for A&M. They got a little work to do, but certainly it's a good time to be an Aggie.
Yeah, no doubt about it. We'll get to see how they're able to progress. Hopefully we won't have another funny offseason like we did last season, and we'll see these guys really get to work through their offense, get these young guys integrated, and get the guys who didn't get to play as much last year because of the pandemic shortened offseason and all of that, see them really get their feet under them. Because I think that we have the makings of what could be a pretty, really, really talented squad for the next couple of years, because that's one thing that A&M's going to benefit with. You know, you've got all these high-talent guys that are freshmen. They've got to stay in college for a couple of years.
Yeah, well, in September 4th, Saturday, September 4th, unless things just completely unravel, it'll be A&M opening up the 2021 season, hosting one of the high-powered offenses in the nation this year, Kent State.
Kent State,
yes. Kent State, yeah. And so they'll do that. And then next year, finally, your fourth year and final year at Missouri, we get the tangle between A&M and the Tigers there at Missouri. So I think we'll probably be trying to make the trip up there and see you and see the Missouri campus, which is a great campus and a great area, and we look forward to making a road trip with the Aggies next year, hopefully.
And hopefully I'll be doing that game for KCOU. I'm really going to try and get in there, because that's about as neutral of a broadcast as you can get, if not an A&M-leaning broadcast on KCOU, the student radio station, 88.1 FM. Which is where this podcast is normally found and where it'll transition back to here in the coming weeks as Jerry and I get back on campus. I believe we're both going back next week. Today, of course, is January 10th, so we're looking at coming back later this week, and hope we'll be changing the time about it, but we will keep you guys updated with our podcast, because we'll be going back online. We'll keep posting it on the podcast websites, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, doing all of that so you guys can continue to listen on demand. And for that, you know, again, just to wrap up, A&M looking really sharp for the future, and Jerry and I should have a basketball episode coming out this week, so be sure and stay tuned for that. And if you like this podcast, you know, be sure to give us a like, share us with your friends, anyone who you think is really interested with this one, you know, especially with some A&M centered people, going to be trying to share this with the family, doing all of that. And so with that, thank you so much for listening, and we will see y'all in our next episode.